You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the people and ideas behind your favorite online brands. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Today, we are talking to the co-founders of Birdies, Bianca Gates and Marissa Sharkey. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Excited to be here.
So maybe the first thing we should do is sound off. Bianca Gates, you're the CEO of Birdies. Is that correct?
Yes, I am.
And Marissa Sharkey, you're the co-founder and president of Birdies?
That is what I go by, yes.
Except at home she goes by, oh my God, mom.
Right.
But yes, for this purpose, it president, co-founder.
So you're the creators of Birdies, which is a direct-to-consumer brand of slippers. Is that correct? Or how would you describe it?
Yep. We are sort of categorized with slippers, but we have invented a whole new category of footwear. So we are slippers really for the entertaining space of your home. So we're solving the problem of what to wear when you come home. You're not ready to put on your pajamas and take off your makeup and put on your isolation slippers. Really, we're the slippers when you're ready to open the door, the front door, welcome your guests in, and you want to wear something fun and different and that is like celebratory, but also comfy and cozy. We do sort of fall into the slipper category, but we find that about 75% of our customers do wear us out and about. So these shoes are durable enough to wear out, but comfy enough to wear in.
So for people who haven't worn or seen Birdies before, what do they look like? How do they feel? What's unique about them?
Yep. So when we were thinking about how we would design this like new category of shoes, we really distilled it down to three components. We wanted the attractive silhouette of a designer flat, and the structure and the comfort and the support of a sneaker, but the softness and luxuriousness of a slipper. So we've combined those three components. We added a rubber sole for indoor traction and outdoor wearability, and those components have created a new category called Birdies.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. The people who are wearing Birdies today are mostly women. Is that right?
We designed them for women because we love our female friends. But interestingly enough, we have had a decent amount of men purchase and wear us. And they look fabulous in Birdies. So eventually, we'd love to tap into a broader male market. But for now, it's a pretty narrow male market. But they're having a lot of fun wearing us.
I'm looking at your website, and some of these look really rad. I might consider wearing a pair.
We would love it.
Yeah. So Whip, let's go back to the start of Birdies. Actually, do you remember the first time you two ever met?
That's funny. So Bianca and I have been friends for well over 10 years, long before we started or really even had an idea to start a business together. We met through our husbands, who were at the time our respective boyfriends. They were going to business school together on the West Coast. And at the time, both Bianca and I were living in New York City. So they had, you know, through their business school, a trip out to the East Coast. And they said, oh, you guys should probably get to know each other. We're starting to get to know each other and become friends. So they introduced us. And actually, I remember the night that we met, we probably went out for dinner with a bunch of friends. And then ultimately, we ended up back at Bianca's apartment, for an impromptu kind of late night party. And of course, in New York City, everybody's dressed up with their fancy heels. And then, you know, late at night when you're back at a friend's house, you kind of want to kick them off and you're left with your, you know, frumpy gym socks or kind of whatever, you know, bad kind of pedicure you have going on at the time. And so we always laugh that thinking back to that night when we kind of first met each other, that actually that's kind of a use case for Birdies and part of the rationale and what we thought was missing in footwear at the time.
So at some point you decided that together you would form this company. It sounds like you were mostly friends through your husbands during that time. Bianca, do you remember what it was that you saw in Marissa that made you want to pursue this with her?
I think that was sort of the start. I mean, you know, people can introduce you to somebody and you either hit it off immediately or it takes a while to, you know, become warm and friendly, or you just really frankly don't like the person. And for me with Marissa, it was an instantaneous friendship. We are very different. And I always really respected Marissa professionally and I loved hanging out with her personally. So for me, there was this level of curiosity because she was a little bit, you know, different than me, but had this like big heart and we had a lot of fun together. And so she just brought something unique and interesting to this friendship that I've always admired. And then, you know, who would have guessed 12 years later, we would actually start a business together because of that.
So from there, you started Birdies. And you officially launched in 2016?
We officially did a soft launch at the end of 2015, but I was still at Facebook at the time. So this was really slow going. We joke that we were sort of building the plane as we were flying it. You know, the intention was never for this to really become a big company. I mean, it was a dream, but it was really just sort of like a side hustle. And, you know, we had no idea if there was even a market for something like this. So this was sort of a playful thing that we did for fun for about a year and a half until this really started to take off and have some traction. So our official launch date was November 2015. But, you know, we really sort of started to really lean into this about a year later. And then since then, it's sort of grown pretty quickly.
So I want to go in more depth on both of your backgrounds, because you've brought so much experience to what you're doing at Birdies. Why don't we start with Bianca? You were in advertising sales and digital marketing at Facebook, at Instagram for about 5 or 6 years, and Viacom before that for a while. Tell me a little bit about how all that experience feeds into what you're doing at Birdies.
Yeah, so I am an extrovert by definition. I love people. I love media. I love entertaining. I love entertainment. So it was no surprise that I found myself in a career where, you know, I was entertaining clients and selling them advertising in, you know, big shows. And once I started to get a sense that, you know, television landscape was changing and the digital marketplace was growing, I really wanted to be at the forefront of this shift. And what better place to be at than Facebook? So I joined Facebook in 2011. At the time, I was working with big retailers and e-commerce companies build up their businesses using Facebook's platform. You know, my job was really to help these big companies integrate their technologies with the technology that Facebook was building at the time. And it was really interesting. I learned a lot. I eventually learned that these big retail companies, they really have some, you know, tough times ahead. And really, it just comes down to the capabilities that they have or don't have from a technology standpoint. And so it became sort of frustrating for them and for us that, you know, they really wanted to take advantage of the technology that we had to offer, but they didn't have the right infrastructure to do it. So as, you know, we started to think about Birdies a few years later and the possibility that we could actually leapfrog the hardships that these big companies were facing and enter into, you know, the new modern day world that it is today, we just saw this like tremendous opportunity to scale fast and avoid a lot of the problems and pitfalls that these big retail companies are facing right now.
And Marissa, you have an incredible background in operations and retail, working at Bain & Company for a while and Ross, the department store, for 5 years. How does that fit in?
So I many years ago now, got my MBA at Wharton. And after that, I joined Bain & Company, which is a big consulting, management consulting firm. And while I was there, I really focused on retail. I was just always interested in that field and enjoyed it. And so I worked with a lot of different large retailers similar to Bianca. In fact, I think we may have had some of the same clients that we may have worked with in our past careers. But you know, always solving different challenges. You know, in management consulting, you're kind of given a project with, like, you know, a big retailer in my case, and you sort of swoop in for, you know, about 6 months and help them through a strategic issue. So it was extremely interesting. I worked on everything from, you know, brands to department stores to a lot of drug stores, and really got to see the lay of the land. And similar to Bianca, like, a lot of the challenges that they faced in sort of this very quickly evolving world. But it was just a fascinating experience. And, you know, definitely in consulting, you really need to come up to speed very quickly on things you don't necessarily know a lot about. And then also try to solve a problem with, like, a very limited, but some data. So that's been tremendously helpful in Birdies, because especially at the start of, you know, building our own business, like, we were the only employees and really had to become a shipping expert, a packaging expert, a supply chain and design and marketing expert, you know, all in 5 minutes. So that kind of, like, well, what's the most important crystallized piece of information I need to know so I can make this decision, that I kind of learned, you know, throughout my consulting experience, was very helpful. from there, I joined, you know, I wanted to kind of, you know, stop thinking about things and help companies actually do things. So I left consulting and I joined Ross Stores running corporate strategy for them. Obviously, Ross is a very successful retailer with a really clear mission. You know, it's a kind of, you know, bargain shopping and the best deals for brand names. And so that really resonates with a certain customer sect. And they're very, very focused on that core customer, how to build the experience for what that customer is looking for. So that was also just a very particular part of retail, but a very fascinating experience as well. Just having that retail background has certainly helped. At the same time, you know, neither of us ever created a product or designed anything. So that's, you know, always been a part of the challenge for us.
It's funny to hear you talk about your illustrious backgrounds, because me and Jesse, my co-founder at Lumi, and I did almost the exact opposite and started our first company right out of school. We've been working together for 7 or 8 years, but we started with zero knowledge. We have just been working our way up, trying to pick up that experience as we go along. And sometimes it feels like maybe the opposite way makes more sense.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think you guys are more you know, risk takers, I guess, than we were initially in our career. So that's very admirable.
Well, thanks. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Going back to marketing, Bianca, how would you describe Birdie's approach to marketing? I know that you are doing incredibly well through social media. You're also using the platforms that you helped build at Facebook and Instagram. Is social media one of the main ways that you guys market at Birdie's?
Well, I think at a high level, it's having a clear vision of who we are and the story we want to tell. And then we utilize different technologies and platforms to get in front of people to tell that story. And obviously, social media helps us tell a beautiful story with beautiful imagery at scale, and it allows us to reach the right people with the message that we're trying to send them at scale. So social media has been a very, very good friend to us. But you know, for anybody that's ever started a company or is thinking about starting a company, there's no silver bullet. There really is no silver bullet. So technology really allows us to sift through tons of data and understand what's working, what's not working, how can we implement change fast. And again, when I think about, like, you know, television commercials or direct mail or billboard, it takes so much time to collect any form of data to really understand what's worked and what's not worked. When I think about social media and advertising and marketing to people, we can make changes immediately to our copy or to our creative. And that's very helpful to us as we scale our business. Every minute matters and every dollar matters. So social media has been a tremendously helpful tool for us to tell our story.
You were on the front lines of being involved with big companies who are using Facebook advertising. Are there things that you experienced then that you're trying to pitch to your clients that they didn't do, but you're doing now? Things that they weren't willing to experiment with or take risks on?
Yeah, I mean, a lot, especially in the early days. You know, these big companies, they have a lot to lose, whereas us as a small company, we have a lot to gain. You know, we're still so small. So for them, it was really a matter of their data privacy. And, you know, Facebook has this tremendous ability to find the right customers at the right life cycle when they're ready to convert, et cetera. And so a few years ago, Facebook had launched something called custom audiences, where you could upload your, you know, CSV file of your customers, find them on Facebook, and market to them based on the behavior that you've known them to have over the last few years, et cetera. And marketers were very resistant to giving us any of that information for a variety of reasons. But it was these smaller, fast-growing e-commerce companies that were willing to take, you know, that educated risk, for lack of a better term, and they were able to scale their companies really fast utilizing that technology. Ultimately, the bigger companies decided to do it, but it was years later, and I think they recognized that, you know, had they been more nimble and moved faster and taken a leap of faith, that they could have taken advantage of this opportunity a lot sooner.
A lot of brands these days have been experimenting with influencer marketing and, you know, getting people to wear or use their products. One of the big stories around Birdies has been Meghan Markle, the new Duchess, has been a cheerleader for you. How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, talk about serendipity. I think, you know, we often talk about at Birdies that we've been slapped with a magic stick. So a couple of years ago when we had launched, we did this exercise, Marissa and I, on, you know, if there was a celebrity that could be an ambassador of our brand, who would that be and why? And we went through, you know, 30, 40, 50 A-list celebrities, and we just couldn't find the right person. And then we sort of started to broaden who we were going to become interested in. And we came across Meghan Markle. And at the time, she was on a cable show called Suits. So not necessarily this big movie star, but she really sort of hit the nail on the head for us from a brand perspective. She really embodied our brand. If we could create this birdie, it would have been Meghan Markle. You know, she's a feminist. She's ambitious. She's imperfect, but she's okay with that. And she's leaning into her career. And she always had this like casual, elegant, graceful look and sensibility to herself, which really just was Birdies. So we decided that we would send her a pair of slippers and in hope that she would like them. And about a week later, we see her wearing us and posting about us on social media, on her Instagram. And that continued on. I mean, we did not pay her. We did not ask her to do any of this. We just simply gifted them to her. And she was wearing us so much that that she would continue to reorder. And it was always the Blackbirds. And she started wearing us on set and then traveling, running errands. And then we started to see her wearing us in London. And we thought, gosh, maybe she's doing a big movie over there. And she talked a lot about the versatility of this slipper. Then there were rumors that she was dating Prince Harry. And Marissa and I thought, oh my gosh, can you even imagine if like this is the one and she ends up becoming the princess and we've made the slipper fit for a princess. And then on Cyber Monday, last November, is when they announced the royal engagement and our company just exploded. I mean, the timing of it all could not have been any better. And we're incredibly grateful to her, which is why we just thought we should probably do something nice for her and make her a pair of bridal birdies that we sent to her a few weeks ago.
Wow. I'm not sure that's something you can plan. Finding someone and then they literally become the princess. How many times have you heard in the past few months that Birdies is a Cinderella story?
Yeah, a lot. It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun.
I saw that you got involved with the royal wedding. How did that go?
Well, unfortunately, we did not get an invitation to the royal wedding. However, in leading up to it, it was very exciting. I mean, we were able to design for one person in particular, and we just customized this unique slipper that embodied sort of like who we thought she was in the form of a slipper and how she would wear us. So we used this blush Duchess satin material, this like really sexy, but not too fussy pom-pom on the top of it. It's a slide, so she can easily slide in and out of it as she's getting ready that morning. And then we put these gorgeous pearls on the back of the heel to really elevate the look without, again, it being too over the top. And so we loved them so much that we actually ended up making other slippers designed just like that without some of the unique embellishments like the pearls on the back. And we reached out to her team and we said, you know, we've made these. And they said, great, here's the address to Kensington Palace. And I mean, I was floored. I remember walking this to FedEx, and I'm not kidding you, I was like telling the guy, like, I need these sort of like, you know, sent pretty fast. And he's asking me for the address, and I'm giving him the address, and then Kensington Palace. And he pauses and he's like, where? Yep, that's the place. And then it says, you know, in care of Meghan Markle. And it was just one of those like super random stories that I will never forget. Just awesome. And I'm kind of like a mini celebrity now at our local FedEx because of that. that's my claim to fame.
Did you get any good photos of her wearing them at the wedding?
So these were made for her to wear as she's getting ready the morning of. So, you know, with a robe, as she's getting hair and makeup done. So no photographs yet of her getting ready for her wedding day. But we are, you know, welcome to receiving any of those photos. If she's listening right now, Meghan, please send us any photos of you getting ready in your birdies.
Have you seen the movie Phantom Thread yet?
No.
Oh, my God. You have to see it. It's Daniel Day-Lewis's last movie. by P.T. Anderson. He plays a dressmaker in London who creates these fabulous outfits for queens and royalty. It's really amazing. You have to see it.
Yeah, actually, now that you're telling me what it's about, I have heard about it and meant to make a note of it to watch it, actually.
Well, we should watch it together.
Yes.
I can't wait to hear what you think of it. I won't give you any spoilers, but it was one of my favorite movies from last year. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your review. So another person who's had a big influence on Birdies, from what I hear, is Sheryl Sandberg, who's the, I actually don't know her title at Facebook, but she's the second command over there. What's the story there?
Yeah, so Sheryl is the chief operating officer at Facebook, and she was really the reason that I joined Facebook after 7 years at Viacom. So she's had a very big influence on my life, both personally and professionally. So, you know, as the story goes, you know, Marissa and I just, we're building this company without really having much of a map in front of us. So the story behind that is Marissa and I had a lot of fun creating this fictitious product that nobody has ever invented. We would take components of different shoes and put them together to create Birdies. And in having so much fun, we didn't really think about once they arrived, what we would do with them. And it's like that Field of Dreams moment where they say, like, if you build it, they will come. Apparently not so much in an e-commerce company. Apparently you do need to market and advertise it. So, you know, in moving fast, when our manufacturing team asked us for an address, Marissa happened to provide her home address. I guess we should have thought about that also, the repercussions of that. And with, like, you know, terrible communication back and forth, Marissa calls me one day in early November of 2015, and she's like, you're not going to believe this, but there's an enormous truck in front of my house telling us they have our slippers. And we had ordered about 2,000 of them at the time. That was the minimum quantity to really test this market. And we both sort of freaked out. And, you know, one, Marissa's freaking out because what is she going to do with 2,000 slippers in front of her house? And I'm freaking out because I have this, like, amazing job at Facebook, and this sort of, like, this fun project had sort of taken out on a life of its own. And I thought this could be a time where I just get fired because I've had this, like, side project that was becoming a business. So I freaked out. She freaked out. She got her neighbors to help remove the slippers and the boxes inside her garage. And I thought, well, what do I do with Facebook? So I emailed Sheryl that afternoon and I said, you know, listen, I've been sort of moonlighting as this, like, slipper entrepreneur, never realizing they would come. I have no idea how to sell these. It's November. The only time we're going to be able to sell these is now for holiday. The only option I have at this point is to just post on my personal Facebook page that we've launched this company in hopes that our friends will buy and share with their friends. You know, is this okay? And Sheryl responded immediately, just so proud and so happy and so complimentary. And she said, absolutely, I'm here to support you. And by the way, for reference, she did say that her parents had given her a pair of unattractive slippers the year before, because what else do you give somebody like Sheryl? So she was delighted to receive a pair of Birdies as well that holiday. So I forwarded that email to my manager and I said, listen, Sheryl seems to be okay with this. I'm hoping you are too. And of course, my manager was so happy as well. So we posted on our personal Facebook page that night, and that's sort of how we got started with selling Birdies.
That's really cool. It's funny that you mention receiving that big delivery of slippers. I've totally been there. I think it happens to every entrepreneur at some point. And now the funny thing at Lumi is that we're on the other side of it. When we're sending packaging to people, it's oftentimes the first time they've ever received a freight shipment, and suddenly a truck arrives with pallets to their four-story walk up in Manhattan. And so that's why we started creating some resources around that, like articles about what to expect when you're expecting a freight shipment and all that kind of stuff.
Totally. Yeah, well, that's very helpful. Too bad we did not access that before we got the 2,000 slippers.
Going back to the manufacturing, though, having not had a background in that area and trying to figure out how to make something with people in China, how did you go about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty hard to do at first. You know, we wanted to create something entirely new, and it turns out, you know, we wanted to make like 100, maybe in LA or something, so that we can, like, get a sense for what the product really could be. But that really wasn't possible, we quickly learned. So we needed to make them in China early on. And that obviously implies much more complicated logistics and also like a lot higher minimum quantities than we initially wanted to make just to test it out. So we scoured the world. I mean, we really leverage our network and our friends' networks, and we like tried to talk to anybody we could who ever like had anything to do with like making footwear. And it was really hard when we tried to kind of pitch this to people. They're like, okay, well, I make shoes. I don't know anything about slippers. And then someone in slippers would say, you know, we can't make this in a slipper factory. You need to talk to someone who has a shoe factory, which turns out like is a very different type of construction. And so eventually we found, you know, a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend who had some experience making slippers and did have connections to a factory overseas. That was like the very important first step. And then from there, of course, they want, you know, designs or CADs or whatever materials. And then they can go off and kind of construct our slipper. But Bianca and I like did not understand that world at all from a design perspective. So we would buy like really fancy, really expensive shoes and say like, okay, we want this material. And then we would kind of buy, you know, pretty cheap and inexpensive slippers, but that did have some different comfort components. And we would cut those up and we would kind of sort of send it to somebody and try to say like, what can you do to combine these? So to their credit, they made something that was comfortable if it fit you, although they didn't necessarily fit everybody, but they were sort of a start. And I think that's a good lesson. Obviously in technology, people always, you know, start with a product that might not be 100%, but you just want to get something out there. And in consumer products or certainly in a slipper, that's not as common, but I'm thankful that we did because we started to get product feedback and people kind of interested in our brand early on, even though our product wasn't where we really envisioned it to be. And then over time, you know, then we had some success with that. And then, you know, Meghan Markle and other celebrities started to wear them and they might be in a magazine. Then we were able to take that to kind of better manufacturers and say, you know, here's where we're starting, but now we have at least some credibility and traction. And we've kind of, we're able to sort of upgrade our manufacturing and design process that way. But that's always been, you know, this is the type of product that's made at really big scale. People don't usually work with like a small startup in this space. So that's always been something that's been a challenge. I think we'll always have, you know, product ups and downs, but we really have now gotten to a place where we love our manufacturing partners and really feel like we are, you know, in just a great place to grow and scale quickly.
How many major versions of the shoe have there been up until now?
I would say we've had three big iterations of the shoe. Yeah, where we started and then we had sort of an interim stage and now we're kind of, you know, past that, we think, with something that's really terrific. So we've been able to make improvements along the way and we're really creating something entirely new. So this concept isn't out there. So we know where we want to head. And so we've been satisfied at different points along the way, but it was never really where we knew we wanted to land. But, you know, fortunately, customers were satisfied along that journey as well. And now we're getting to, you know, where we always knew we wanted to be, but we did have to sort of work incrementally to get there.
One of the things that I'm constantly telling people when they come to me with their product ideas is to keep the assortment of different styles and colors as simple as possible, because then you can hit those minimum order quantities and you don't have to worry so much about having inventory of all the different styles. And when I go to your website, I notice that you do have a lot of different options there. Plus, you have the obvious challenge of keeping all the different sizes in stock. So how do you think about that in terms of keeping everything in inventory and developing new styles?
Yep. So we do have a range of sort of colors and embellishments on our slippers. And, you know, we really want to increase that so that people have, you know, variety and choice. But at the same time, like the silhouettes, like we're trying to stick to a core number of silhouettes that we're known for. We have a smoking slipper and now we've just introduced a slide. And so because the construction, you know, we have limited, you know, what's called a construction or a silhouette, but then we kind of put on a lot of different colors on top of them. So that's one way to kind of decrease the complexity, but still give customers choice. And we kind of learned that over time and obviously have a strategy going forward that, you know, we've learned from what's worked for us in the past and also what customers what customers want. So we certainly use our like historical sales data to kind of inform what we're doing next. And we're getting better at that as we get more data. And also as we work with manufacturers who, you know, also really understand kind of what works in the type of slipper that we're trying to create. And then, you know, our goal is really to be able to introduce more collections and more variety over time, still sticking to the same core silhouettes that we've been talking about, but to give, customers reasons to, you know, buy more throughout the year and kind of have different, you know, some that go with, you know, your preppy outfit, others that go with your bolder, colorful outfit, whatever it is. So, you know, we want to bring the same choice that people have on the outdoor footwear market, which obviously is extremely broad, but give them kind of options, you know, for entertaining and obviously errands and travel as well.
I think one more thing to add in there is while we're trying to sort of help women maintain the integrity of their outfit at home while they're entertaining, we've seen pretty fast that our customer base is 24 to 74 years old. And so what those different pockets of women want, depending on the age group, varies. So it not only varies in terms of style, but also functionality. So, you know, while some might really love the slip-on, slip-out with the backless ones, others really like the full loafer around the foot. And then there's different styles, right? You have the edgy girl, you've got the preppy girl, you've got the classic girl. So we're trying to not only design for the type of woman that you are, but also within a particular age range that you might fall in with between 24 to 74.
One of the challenges that I can imagine you have as a business is that you have something that needs to fit on someone's foot. And I think in the footwear market in particular, we've seen a lot of innovation around customer service in this area. Zappos has been really big around making returns really convenient. And that has, you know, a cost and a logistics component associated with it. How do you think about addressing that question of fit? Is that something that comes up, or is that something that, due to the nature of slippers, it's a little bit more forgiving?
Right. I mean, those questions are super critical to our business. I would say, first of all, we are creating a product whose whole platform is it's stylish and comfortable. So it needs to fit even better than what people think of from like an average, you know, shoe that they're buying. So, we set a very high bar for that. And of course, with that, even though we want to make broad generalizations, we've absolutely learned that literally every foot is different. So when one person says they're always a size 8 and this is too small, the next person next to them says they're always a size 8 and this is too big. So, you know, obviously returns and exchanges are part of our business. And we just really feel like we need to invest in that Zappos level customer service. That's what people are expecting at our price point. That's what people are expecting in an e-commerce brand that's, you know, very customer friendly. So that's been critical to us since day one. And we've really invested in that so that we're able to kind of deliver that, you know, very easy return, very easy exchange experience. And then also helping customers through like any fit questions that they have, you know, hopefully on the front end so we can avoid anything on the back end. So we've really invested in our customer service. That's one piece of it. And then beyond that, we've really been able to leverage a lot of different technology solutions to help us with the reverse logistics. That's hard. It's something that we're thinking about every day. And we're always trying to tweak it to make it even easier for the customer and obviously more cost effective for us. But I think what's just amazing about the e-commerce space right now is there are so many software solutions out there that kind of tackle some of the pain points. We are not experts in reverse logistics, but of course, we're able to tap into a few different companies that are. You know, we have to invest in learning about them and figuring out what makes sense for our business, but we don't have to like build the resources or certainly build the software to do that. So we've really tried to find many different areas, you know, around logistics and certainly around returns and exchanges where we can leverage different technologies that just make it really customer friendly and then just a lot easier for us. And, you know, they're out there. So we're very lucky to be doing it, you know, at this time, I would say.
Are there any specific providers or resources that you can point people to if they're thinking about that same problem?
I think there's a bunch of, returns providers in the space. I know right now we work with Returnly, there's Narvar, there's Loop, Happy Returns. There's a lot of different, you know, providers out there that are just solving this problem in a very high tech and pretty high touch way that makes some of these challenges, like, we have the ability to overcome them.
There's a great Jeff Bezos quote, and I forget how it goes exactly, but his point is that people are never satisfied. When you reach a certain level of customer experience, there's always a next level. So if you have free two-day shipping and great returns, that becomes the norm. And then something else becomes the next thing that you need to achieve. If returns are just part of the shoe buying experience online nowadays, what are you seeing as the next level that you need to get to?
I mean, I think that's a good question. I mean, so much of it, I think, goes back to, like, the personal interactions that our customers have with our brand, whether it's through our customer service chat or through our in-store experience. So what's interesting, you know, we talked a little bit about fit before. So we've had people who, like, have tried on a ton of different versions and it's just the fit isn't working for them. You know, it's rare, but it happens. But I think the customer, you know, but they write in, like, but I love the customer experience. Like, it's, you guys have been so helpful with it that I'm going to try your next collection or I'm going to try your next launch because maybe that will fit me. So just, like, we can make returns easy. We can make exchanges easy and really painless for the customer. But I think being able to sort of leverage a personal relationship that, of course, we can't have with every single person, but, you know, as much as we can, just providing that, like, personal connection in any level of customer service is great. So there's obviously tools, you know, for that as well. Anytime somebody chats us or emails us, like, we can kind of very quickly connect them to their order or, you know, what they've looked at on our website. So that helps us kind of serve them in an easier way and certainly answers their questions a lot faster. But just using any tool we can to provide a personal touch, even though we're an e-commerce brand and, you know, most of these transactions are happening electronically, you know, I think that's just important. And we're also a brand that's very warm. Our whole platform is around bringing friends and family together. So it's just really critical that we're able to provide that.
We've talked about some of the great people that you have in your corner. A few others that come to mind are your investors. I know that Andy Dunn, who's the co-founder of Bonobos, has been involved, and Kirsten Green, who founded Forerunner Ventures and who's an investor in Lumia as well, but they're involved in so much of the exciting e-commerce businesses that are out there. Both of them have incredible track records. I'm curious, how did you decide to pursue those investors and make such a big life decision? That's a pretty big commitment.
Yeah, I mean, no kidding. I mean, and I was still at Facebook and making, you know, great money. I would pull up and they would valet my car. I had chefs cooking for me breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Life was good. But, you know, it was one of those things where as sales picked up and as demand for the product came in, as we found celebrities just reaching out to us or their stylists reaching out to us for a complimentary pair to wear, and then they would talk about us on social media, you know, this sort of, this fun side hustle sort of became bigger than we could keep up with. I mean, I'm very grateful for Marissa. She had been doing this full time since the beginning, but certainly from my end of the bargain, you know, with sort of like the sales and marketing end of this, I could not keep up with the demand that was coming our way. So in November or October of 2016, I celebrated my 5-year anniversary at Facebook, and at 5 years, employees in good standing get a 2-month fully paid sabbatical. So I decided to take my sabbatical during the most critical time of year for us, which was holiday, to really just see if I were full time focused on this 100%. Is this worth my time? Is there a bigger push that happens, you know, if I dedicate more time? And what happened was exactly that. You know, after giving a piece of my time to Birdies and now rotating over 100% of my time to this, we saw a massive explosion in our business. And when I went back to Facebook in January, I had this dilemma, like, you know, at what point do you know when to jump? At what point do you know now's the time to give up your career, to make the sacrifices that you need, to give up equity in your company, to raise money? You know, these were really big, serious, sort of life-changing decisions. And we were at a critical juncture here. And I'll never forget this. Like, as I was going back and forth and debating it in January of 2017, Andy Dunn sent me an email, and it just said $100,000 in the subject line. And I opened it up and it just said, you know, hey, I'm hearing about Birdies all over Manhattan. This has the ability to be bigger than Bonobos even. I think you need to think about quitting your job and raising a round, and I'm going to be the first check that you take. I'm offering you $100,000. And I think it was a combination of having taken a few months off of Facebook to do this full time, his email, seeing the sales and traction and celebrity endorsement of this, and the story that we were able to tell, you know, it was a culmination of a lot of things that really made me think deeply. And obviously Marissa, you know, would have loved to have had me full time, you know, even earlier. So, you know, there was a lot of sort of pressure that like this side hustle could become something. And the question wasn't if, but when. And so I did feel a lot of pressure, like, you know, the time is now. And I kept telling my husband, like, well, maybe we need to get to this next milestone to really know if this is going to work. And, you know, he told me, like, you guys have hit far too many milestones to even be thinking twice about this. The time is now. So we agreed that I would leave Facebook in the spring of last year. And I gave my notice. It was really hard. I met with Cheryl on my last day and I was in tears. And you know, she was giving me a hug, but she's like, why are you crying? This is like amazing. This is a dream. This is exciting. And I said, you know, I just don't know what the future holds. I know what it holds here at Facebook. I don't know what it holds with Birdies. And her words to me were, look, like you'll always have a job back here. Trust me, you'll never come back. But if ever you need to, we're here for you. And in the meantime, we're cheering you on. So I just thought, you know what, this is my time. This is, I'm going to do this. And I left in tears on Friday. And by Monday, you know, it was like, you know, a whole new world and a whole new chapter. And then came the fun conversation around fundraising and, you know, how much do we raise and from who? And I think being two women, you know, we've been scared to death about raising money from venture capitalists. And, you know, it was a big sort of conversation as to what we wanted to do. And where we netted out was not where we initially thought we wanted to go, but we're very glad that where we landed, and we are extremely honored and proud to have 4Runner have led our round.
There's so much going on right now in the footwear space between big companies like Nike and Adidas duking it out and lots of small brands popping up every day, Allbirds, MGMI, Rothy's, etc. It almost seems like a red ocean. I'm just curious, what do you think 4Runner and the other investors saw when you started pitching them your idea?
I think what Kirsten saw, and she saw this really fast in the conversation we had with her, but she just said, you know, it's rare that you see somebody creating a solution in an area there's tremendous white space. And in the slipper category, it's been a massive category that has gone untouched or unnoticed and even unbranded forever. And not only were we thinking about tackling this category, but we were looking at doing something completely different with it, something never been done before, marketing it differently, and solving a real problem that the traditional slipper didn't really solve for. So I think her enthusiasm was that we were going to literally create a whole new category in footwear and not just compete with other footwear companies necessarily.
There's not that many business books that I recommend, but one that I really do like is Blue Ocean Strategy. And they talk about creating products in that white space, areas where there aren't very many competitors. The examples they give are things like Yellowtail Wines, which created a wine for beer drinkers at a time when wine sales were tiny compared to beer sales in America. Or another company that's well known for using that strategy is Nintendo. They thought about, what if we create a console for people who don't buy consoles? And so I definitely see that there's a huge market of people who are not wearing slippers. What if we create a slipper for people who don't buy slippers? But as soon as I think about that, I'm wondering, why hasn't someone done that before?
No, totally. Totally. And that was sort of the hesitation that I had initially, was like, why am I leaving my big job at Facebook for something that could and should have been solved already? Maybe somebody's tried it and there's just no market for it. But then time after time, and looking back over the last decade, you go to people's homes now, more often than not, they'll ask you to please take off your shoes, and people are walking barefoot or wearing socks. And if it happens to be your own home, you're likely pulling out a pair of slippers that make sense. That's what you wear, but they don't go with your outfit. They look ridiculous with your outfit. So, you know, it's less about us wanting to like shake up the footwear category, but and more so like solving an obvious problem once and for all. And when people ask us what we're doing and we just say we're making fashionable slippers, it's like, you don't need to say anything more. People get it. We've solved a void that most people didn't even realize it existed, because nobody had even started to tackle the problem the way we have.
I know you've been building a flagship store I feel like your next store has to be in Tokyo. I was just in Japan recently, and slippers are a huge part of the culture there. I'm sure you're aware of that already, but is that something that's on your radar?
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I think like this is why Birdies is going to be the next billion-dollar brand, because, you know, we like to say here internally, if you have feet and you live in a home, you likely need Birdies. So, you know, it's definitely a plan to go after international markets. I think what we need to do is really stay focused on becoming a big brand here in the U.S., nailing a few things and doing it really well, and then figuring out positioning for other countries. But Asia is definitely a huge market for us, and we're super excited to launch there when we're ready.
Can you share a little bit about the first flagship store that you've built?
Yeah, so we have a wonderful store on Union Street in San Francisco, and you know, our concept is all about opening the door and inviting people into your home. And so we were able to design a space that just feels like you're in a living room, your friend's living room. It has a living room, a dining room. It's very beautiful. It looks like a beautiful home. And we really sort of welcome people in to kind of feel that Birdies experience. Kick off your shoes, try on some slippers. And we really want to make, you know, all of our customers feel at home. So I think that's really resonated with people coming into our store. First of all, it's beautiful, but also it's just a very warm and inviting experience. So it gives you a sense of, you know, the lifestyle vision of Birdies. And then people want to, you know, get the slippers, go throw a dinner party or whatever it is, invite their girlfriends over at home. So we've been able to just create that experience and people really enjoy it. It's also, you know, we found that it's a great place for us to host events and other things that really just enforce, not necessarily like our individual products, but just our brand and our brand aesthetic and kind of what we're standing for. So it's been a terrific experience. Our office, like our corporate headquarters, are right upstairs. So it's also an amazing way to get, you know, real quick customer feedback on, you know, how particular products are doing, what types of things people are looking for, and just like our customer, you know, who's our customer base in general. So it wasn't something that we felt we needed to do right away. We sort of opportunistically found a great space and decided to go for it. And it's been very helpful.
When guests come to your office, do you have them change into a pair of Birdies? If not, you should definitely do that.
Well, everybody wants to change into Birdies. So yeah, we typically have most people wearing Birdies here.
Well, and Gusto, which is another partner that we work with, has been very vocal about the fact that none of their employees can wear shoes inside their offices. So obviously, I, you know, reached out to their CEO and I said, you know, maybe for men this isn't a problem, but women certainly, not only do we get cold without shoes on, but, you know, it's a sensitive thing for us to be barefoot in an office environment. So we've now done a deal with them where we're helping them provide slippers for now, just their female employees. But at least, you know, some of them will benefit from our slippers. But yeah, it's becoming a greater trend overall.
That's funny. I didn't know about Gusto, but it's definitely a thing that I was thinking about when I got back from Japan. I got so into the slipper culture there. I was thinking we should definitely implement that at Lumi, but then I started thinking it might be weird. It's sort of like Bert, I think, from Mad Men. He had that office where people had to take their shoes off. We're also in a warehouse in downtown LA, so maybe it's not completely the right fit right now, but we'll get there.
Well, we do have tons of customers telling us that they always have their Birdies under their desk. As soon as they get to work, they put them on and walk around the office in them. So, you know, you can recommend that to everybody at Lumi.
Well, we're happy to give you a founder-to-founder discount for all of your employees at Lumi.
I'm definitely going to take you up on that. I'm not sure if I can get the guys on board yet, if I can get them into a pair of Birdies, but I'm definitely going to give it a try.
Yeah.
Bianca, Marissa, thank you so much for all of your insights. If people want to buy themselves a pair of Birdies, you could go to birdiesslippers.com. What else should we send people to if they want to hear more about you?
If they want to hear more about us, I mean, they can come visit us. Right. Come visit us at 1934 Union Street. As Marissa said, we have our corporate offices upstairs. So come into the store, check us out. And if I'm around, I'd love to meet anybody that has listened to this and has more questions.
Great. Well, I wish you all the best, and thanks again for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.